The way you see yourself can be very different from the way others see you. But who is right? This hour, we'll talk about self-perception and the way others perceive us. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We all know that judging people on the basis of appearance is inaccurate at best. I'll talk with a Des Moines waitress who was stiffed out of a tip because, according to a customer, she isn't, quote, normal looking. Then I'll talk with psychologist Zlatan Krijan of Iowa State University and psychologist Laura Nauman of Nevada State College. We'll talk about how we know ourselves, how we form opinions of others, and explore the intersection between self-perception and what others think of us. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We've all been told that you don't judge a book by its cover, but we all do form impressions of other people based on what they look like. And a lot of us use our appearance to express elements of our personalities. This hour, we're going to talk about self-perception and how others see us. We'll also talk about the intersection between those two ideas, but we're going to start with appearance. Taylor Beck is a waitress at Zombie Burger in Des Moines. She recently shared a note left by a customer who stiffed her on a tip on social media. The note said, "Tips are only for normal-looking people." The story has gone viral, and it's given Beck a chance to share her feelings about self-expression. She is here with us today. Hello, Taylor.
Hey.
Thank you so much for being here today. And first of all, let's talk about what happened. You knew this was going to be a fairly unpleasant interaction right from the start with this customer, right?
Yeah, they totally were not feeling me from the start. They brought in an outside beverage, and I told them that we couldn't do that, and that just totally made them dislike me from the start. But I tried to come back from it as well as possible, but it didn't. I provided them with definitely excellent service, and everything went right. But they just were so unhappy from the start that they decided that they were not going to have a good time no matter what I did.
Right. Well, and so you weren't actually expecting a tip from these individuals.
No.
But you probably weren't expecting the note you received either. When you got that note, what was your reaction?
At first, I felt like sick to my stomach, like my heart dropped. I definitely have never received such an insult like that working there for almost 5 years. So it was definitely a surprise. My immediate reaction was I wanted to go chase after them, but I decided that probably was the least professional choice on my side. So I just kind of instead took a picture of it, posted it on Facebook, just to vent to my friends, see how everyone else felt about it, see who else is experiencing things like this. And it ended up going viral, which I definitely did not expect at all.
So this has given you a kind of unusual opportunity to talk about your style and your self-expression, because you do have a very, very distinctive style. And it's something that you have really shared with others through your Instagram account. And it's something that kind of has made working at Zombie Burger, you really fit in, don't you, there?
Yeah, I guess you could say that I'm kind of the epitome of what we're looking for.
So how would you describe yourself? Because, of course, we don't have pictures on the radio.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously everyone knows I have pink hair at this point. But I would definitely say my style is very, like, 60s, 70s, psychedelia meets 90s grunge, I suppose. I really like vintage clothing. That's kind of my thing, I guess you could say. I sell vintage clothing online, so that's kind of the look I always go for. People definitely notice me. I'm very colorful, bright, but I'm also dark at the same time, if that makes sense.
It does. And it sounds like when you're describing what you look like, it also sounds like maybe you're describing your personality as well. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, we all have a bright, fun side to us. We all also have a dark side to us, you know, that we keep inside.
So with this story going viral, and, you know, so suddenly everybody's commenting on what you look like, which is a pretty uncomfortable situation in some ways, although there's been a huge positive outpouring for you. How has that felt?
It's fun. It's been great. Like, I never expected to receive so many compliments in my life, let alone how many I've gotten in the last 2 weeks. So it's definitely been uplifting for sure. With everything, no matter if you're in the public eye, there's always going to be negative, obviously. but the positivity has definitely outweighed the negativity, and it's been amazing. And I'm just trying to pass that positivity along to others as well.
Well, and you really have tried to take advantage of this opportunity to kind of share your message. So what do you want people to take away from this experience?
I just want people to know it's okay to be yourself, and it's okay to be weird, if that's what you want to call it, I suppose. You don't have to fit into society's norms. You can be yourself, you can express yourself, and you shouldn't have to be judged. And I wish that other people would understand that as well. Just because you don't want to live that way doesn't mean it's not wrong for other people to be that way. It's like we're adults, but we're slightly also children. We can express ourselves. We're not afraid to be ourselves. I feel like when you're a child, you know who you are, and as you age, you kind of lose yourself. But some of us find ourselves again in adulthood, and I think that we're the kind of people that kind of stand out in society, and people judge us for that because we should be conforming, but it's okay if you don't want to conform, and I want more people to realize that it's okay to be who you are.
What do you think you've learned from this experience?
Oh, wow. I've learned so much. I've definitely learned to treat people kinder, for sure, because you never know their stories. You never know where they came from. I mean, we all find ourselves judging people at one point or another. We're all guilty of it. And I've definitely tried to become more patient, less judgmental, and just be a kinder person in general, and just to spread kindness and to give someone at least one person a compliment every day on their appearance, on who they are, no matter what. Just try and spread love at least once a day, at least.
You know, a lot of good things have come out of this experience for you. But when you think about that sort of punch in the gut that you felt when you read that note, are you surprised that those words were able to hurt you so much?
Yeah, I guess I was surprised. I felt like I had overcome all of those feelings of judgment, and I was bullied a lot as a child and like through middle school and high school. And I thought that I had overcome that and that I was a strong woman and that I wouldn't let those things bother me, but it does hurt, you know, like no matter how old you are, if someone attacks you personally like that, it's going to upset you. Even if it's for a minute, it's still an upsetting thing. And you don't expect that, I guess, as much as an adult. And so when it happens, it's even more surprising.
Did it sort of rocket you back and make you feel like you were in junior high or middle school again?
So yeah, all those feelings came back of being judged for who I am or by my appearance. It definitely was a reminder of those times.
Well, Taylor, thank you so much for sharing this experience with us today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate this.
Taylor Beck is a waitress at Zombie Burger in Des Moines. Again, just recently, customer stiffed her on a tip and left a note that said tips are only for normal looking people. And Taylor has used this as an opportunity to really share her message of self-acceptance and self-expression. And it's a great launching point for the conversation we're going to have this hour, because a lot of us do express ourselves through fashion or style. In a sense, we are asking people to judge us based on what we look like. We're expressing our inner selves through our appearance. And that's just part of this very complicated thing that we do when we try to understand ourselves, when we try to understand how other people see us, and try to figure out if those two things line up in reality. So we're talking this hour about self-perception and the perception of others. With me is Zlatan Krijan. He's Associate Professor of Psychology at Iowa State University. Hello, Zlatan.
Hello. How are you?
Great. Welcome back to the show.
It's great to be back.
And also, Laura Naumann is here, Assistant Professor of Psychology at Nevada State College. Hello, Laura.
Good morning. How's it going?
Great. Thank you so much for being here today. And I do want to start with sort of our first impressions of people. We'll talk more about how we understand ourselves as the hour goes on. But Laura, when we see someone, we start to form an impression right away. So we really, in spite of the fact that we've been told ever since we were children not to judge people by what they look like, it's the first thing we do, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. And I know that can be very jarring for people to hear, because I think many of us have the good intention of saying, I don't judge books by their cover. I get to know the person before I kind of form a solid opinion about them. But what we know from cognitive psychology is that our brain, despite what we may want it to do, is constantly working in the background in an automatic, unconscious way. And, you know, it goes anywhere from making judgments of, is this a man or a woman? Are they young? Are they old? Are they black? Are they white? but it also goes to elements of what are the cues that we're getting from their appearance, from their posture, from their facial expression. And, you know, this happens automatically. And then this kind of secondary controlled process comes in and says, okay, using these cues, woman, pink hair, you know, eclectic dress, what impressions do I then form from my knowledge about other people who have had these types of appearance markers and cues? And so certainly, you know, when you hear, even you don't have to see a picture of Taylor, but when you hear pink hair, grunge style, you know, tattoos, you start to think of someone presumably maybe younger, a little bit more open-minded and open to experience, very creative. Certainly her voice and mannerisms also give cues to being very outgoing and friendly to a certain extent. So, you know, these first impressions are happening all the time, and it only when we can stop and say, "Oh, why did I come to that judgment?" That's kind of the secondary, more controlled thought process.
Interesting. And Zlatan, do you have anything you want to add to that?
It was so well stated that I think I'll hold off for now.
All right. Well, obviously, we all understand that people are going to judge us based on what we look like, because a lot of us invest a lot of time and energy creating an exterior of our bodies that is supposed to express something about ourselves. I mean, Zlatan, that's something humans have been doing for a long time, right?
Certainly. I mean, we are very social, even cultural animals, and living together and communicating with one another has been a perennial aspect of a human society. And how we do that with our appearance, and certainly in modern times with our dress and with our online profiles and a lot of media that didn't exist in evolutionary past, is just key part of human life. And whether we cooperate or whether we fight with one another often is very much shaped by these initial impressions, be they wrong or right.
Well, and Laura, as we really hone that exterior, I mean, in some ways we're trying to make it match up with what we think we are like on the interior, but in other ways it's also very much informed by those around us and who we want to be, right?
Absolutely. The research kind of uses the term, it's called an identity claim. And that can be something that is done for the self. So again, reaffirming, this is who I am and how I see myself. And, you know, the clothing that I choose to wear, or the decorations that I choose to hang in my office, are representative about something about me. But at the same time, those things can also be directed to other people. So, you know, one, you know, cute example is people's email signatures. When they, you know, put an inspiring quote or something that is, again, intended to express who they are, not only to themselves, but to others. That's something that everyone who you email is going to read. So these are claims that we're making, not only to reaffirm our own identities, but to share with others. And, you know, again, people are very surprised at how important these cues are in those initial impressions and judgments that we make. And a lot of my research is looking at how accurate can people be using, you know, these various clues. We don't even have to meet a person in order to form a judgment about them. And so
we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're going to talk more about self-perception and how others see us on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about self-perception and how others see us. We're also going to talk about the intersection between those two ideas, which sometimes is a surprisingly small intersection. We'd also love to hear from you this hour. If you ever had an experience where you suddenly realize that the way you see yourself and the way that others see you is radically different, or maybe you express yourself through how you look, through your appearance, and you've had some interesting experiences with that, we'd love to hear from you this hour. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me this hour, Zlatan Krijan, Associate Professor of Psychology at Iowa State University, and Laura Nauman, Assistant Professor of Nevada State College. And Laura, just before the break, I had to interrupt you while we were talking about first impressions and how we try to cultivate the first impression that other people receive of us.
Oh, absolutely. I, you know, it's one of those things that This process of developing our identity actually develops over time, and so I found it interesting that Taylor kind of described her experience, being brought back to high school, being bullied. It's in high school when adolescents are really trying to develop who they are, how do they differ from their parents, and creating a space among their peers. And she mentioned this word, conformity. She wanted to show that she's more accepting of who she is right now, and she doesn't feel like she needs to change, and she can be who she is. And this is something that we are constantly tackling as we get older, trying to find the balance between, respecting the norms, of society, while also, coming to find out who we are, being our unique selves. And in particular, that's particularly relevant in Western culture, is kind of shaping your identity, expressing who you are. And for many of us, it is through our appearance, the hairstyles we choose, the clothing that we choose to wear. And it doesn't always register that is information that other people are using. And it sounds very simple. Certainly when you go to work, maybe you have to wear a certain uniform, but people still find ways, choosing a tie or a pin to wear, again, to kind of let that personality seep out.
Well, and I want to kind of take a few steps back and focus on how that self-identity is formed. And Zlatan, as children grow, is there a developmental stage where that sense of self begins to develop?
Certainly. So probably the first critical event is development of self-awareness, which typically happens between 2 and 4 years of age. And that's where we separate our awareness of ourselves and our body, and even our internal mental contents, such as our emotions, from the sort of physical world on the outside, our house and other people and planet Earth, etc. So this is what sets up this dynamic. We're trying to figure out, so what is this here on the inside, mostly above the neck, where we kind of localize ourselves. And through schooling, this sense gets more and more sophisticated. We start to sort of develop this self-concept of who we are, what we can do. But then it's in adolescence, as Laura has mentioned, where that sort of goes on steroids. And we become even more concerned of sort of a cohesive sense of identity, of a role in society. And in Western cultures, as she mentioned, that's very much tied to with our career aspirations, with the sense of being true to one's inner self.
Now, as people grow, do they tend to have a pretty accurate idea of who they are?
Well, that's a very great question. And so when attempting to answer something like that, it's important to keep in mind that the self that's inside us is sort of a moving target. So some aspects of it are relatively constant. So if you think about things such as our biological sex, age, obviously age changes over time, but in any period we sort of bring that with us.
Right. We're usually right
we
about that. Right?
Yeah, exactly. We know that we are what age we are and what gender we are typically. But then you get to things such as ability and personality, and those things are more dynamic. Certainly abilities are something we can hone and we can improve on, and that gives often a motivational component, which makes it somewhat difficult to know who we are. And then with something like personality, and I'm sure Laura can speak more to this, you're talking about sort of complex tendencies that reach in a lot of domains of life. So to accurately really assess somebody's personality, you need to look at the totality of their tendencies and behaviors and emotions, and that's often difficult to do based on just one example of one behavior.
Are we pretty good at judging whether we're good at something or not? You mentioned that as something we develop over time. Do most adults have a fairly good sense of that?
Good enough to get through the day would be the short answer. So when it comes to those important skills and abilities on which we get a lot of feedback on which a lot of important outcomes ride, for example, a performance at work, getting certain tasks done for your employer, we had a lot of opportunity to hone relatively good, not perfect, but relatively good self-insight while working in those contests. And what we found in our research, that really the domain of skill and performance and the type of skill or performance matters a lot. So to just highlight two extremes, so people are great at knowing whether they know a foreign language. So you can meet somebody from another country, and if they speak to you in a language that you don't know, you will be immediately aware that you don't know anything, and because you can't communicate. You have this sheepish look of expression on the other person's face. So that's a domain in which we get very immediate, very clear, very accurate feedback. But then when you go to other extreme and consider something like lie detection ability, people are very bad at that. There are some people that are better detectors of other people's lies, but those people don't necessarily know who they are. And one thing...
And that's probably something that a lot of us think we're very good at.
Sure, yes. And so one thing that my colleague Ethan Zell, University of North Carolina, who's worked with me on this project on self-insight, so one thing we suggest there is that seldom do we have unequivocal objective feedback about our lie detecting ability. We are never tested systematically. We never get consistent and accurate feedback. So we are pretty free to go around believing this or that about our lie detecting ability, and seldom can we be proven clearly wrong or clearly right.
And as we grow, does our perception of whether we're good at something or not, does that also grow? I think about my son's basketball team that was made up entirely of 7 and 8 year olds, and pretty much every kid on the court really thought that perhaps the NBA was in their future, and maybe that wasn't exactly true. I mean, do we get better at that?
Yes. So with experience comes the feedback that I mentioned. We will likely to have successes, and if we're not very good, we will have failures. And it behooves us to take those failures to heart, not too much, but enough to enable us to really kind of put our eggs in the right basket, to direct our efforts and skills in domains where we can succeed. And also people tend to feel much more fulfilled when they're using their efforts in domains in which they get good outcomes rather than they feel like they're treading water.
This hour, we're talking about self-perception and how others see us. I have Zlatan Krijan, Associate Professor of Psychology at Iowa State University, with us, and Laura Nauman, Assistant Professor of Psychology at Nevada State College. We also want to hear from you, as you have been on a life journey of knowing yourself. What have you learned, or have you had an experience where you suddenly realize that the way other people see you is not at all how you see yourself? We'd love to hear from you. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Nora is on the line in Marion. Hello, Nora.
Hi. Basically, I grew up in the Cedar Rapids, Marion area, but some friends wanted to try to get a business going, so I went down to Marietta, Georgia. Now, I've always had long hair because, for me, long hair means you never have a bad hair day. Forgive me, but it does. But I also am very sensitive to chemicals, so I get skin rashes. So when I was working at a store down in Marietta, I had a long hair back, but I had a very long skirt. Now, nobody told me in Marietta, Georgia, that long hair and long skirts are a sign of being a Pentecostal Christian. I was a Tibetan Buddhist at the time. And every 6 weeks, people would come through my register at the store, and they'd say, "What church do you go to?" And I was undergoing hypnotherapy at the time because I'd gotten some training from him and I wanted more details. And he gave me all sorts of tricks to try to turn these around. But the people kept saying, "What church do you go to?" And I finally had to say, "I don't. I'm a Buddhist." And I actually almost lost my job once because one woman spent 10 minutes trying to convert me. And the manager had to come move her on. And my supervisor said, "Don't try to file for harassment because the cops will ask you the same thing." So sometimes your appearance, you've got to not watch where you're going.
So were you shocked when you discovered that you were communicating something to people through how you chose to dress and how you chose to wear your hair that you weren't intending to communicate?
Yeah, because here in Cedar Rapids, a lot of people wear long skirts. And I mean, I grew up at the edges of the hippie age. And like I said, I've got long hair. I don't have time to mess with it, so it's real easy to handle this way. But it took a coworker of mine 3 years to finally say, "Oh, you didn't realize that you're telling people you're a Pentecostal Christian?" I said, "No, I've been studying Buddhism and other things for at least 20 years. Why would I know that?"
Wow.
And yeah, it was a little But the good thing is that there were people there who were helping me too. So it just, if you're going to be, sometimes you need to watch where you are and know before you go.
Sure. Did that make you want to change how you dress to communicate something else?
No. Unfortunately, I've always been something like this my whole life. No matter where I go, people, it just made me realize that actually that was the final straw that brought me back to Iowa, because I know I was getting old and I wanted to play in the snow before I'm too old to play in it. And they don't get any down there. So.
Right.
Well, Nora, we're glad to have you back. And that's a perfect illustration of what we were talking about earlier, Laura, where the outside, what you're communicating to other people, may not match at all what's on the inside.
Absolutely. I think in Nora's case, you know, she mentioned that she moved to a new part of the country where she's not familiar with the norms, you know, and certainly I've not been there. So I'm glad that she explained that what the stereotype was. But this is what's happening. You know, when we see these cues, we're using our knowledge basically of stereotypes. When we've seen other people wear a long skirt and their hair pulled back, you know, in this part of the country, that's a cue to being a Pentecostal. And so it's interesting, because she described not knowing that that's how she was being perceived. And in certain, you know, as we travel, when we're navigating new spaces, we don't always know what people expect. In Taylor's case, I think it's interesting. I think we are more accustomed to encountering people with dyed hair and tattoos and having a more clear shared meaning of what that might be a cue to. So again, more rebellious, youthful, open-minded. In Nora's case, again, that's a very specific, you know, culturally bound piece of information that she wasn't aware of. And I liked at the end how you asked, you know, did you try to change or conform your appearance to kind of, you know, have others judge you in the way that you see yourself? And she said, no, I've kind of always been this way. And from a personality perspective, we kind of talk about these individual differences, that some people are going to be much more caring of what others think about them and others are going to be less so. And I think both in Nora and Taylor's case, there's this sense of like, I am who I am and this is who I am and this is how I've always been. And I'm going to present myself in this way to others. And hopefully they understand me. And if not, I'm going to keep going.
And that seems like a very desirable trait. That's something we try to educate our children in. Hey, mm-hmm. don't change your behavior because of what other people think of you. But it's also a pretty instinctive thing to care about what other people think, isn't it?
I definitely think, and I think Zatlan could speak to this a lot better in terms of the evolutionary reasons why we choose to do this. But, you know, certainly, you know, we have a sense of belonging. We get help from others. We get reassurance and support from others. So there is a certain kind of balancing act between, you know, maintaining your uniqueness and independence while also recognizing you still have to work at your job. You still have to make money. You still need love and support from your friends and family. So I think it can be a challenge for some people, and again, from a personality standpoint, the actual dimension is called self-monitoring. People who are very conscious of the situation, who are thinking about how others are receiving them, actually are probably going to be the types who are more willing to conform or change when confronted with that information that they're being judged differently. At the very other end of the spectrum, the low self-monitors are very much like, this is who I am. What you see is what you get. And so from my perspective, I would say some people are going to have a much easier time kind of letting it roll off their back, and others, you know, might be greatly affected by it.
Well, and Zlatan, I'd love to hear you weigh in on that, because as Laura was saying, some of us are more inclined not to care. Some of us are more inclined to care. Is that something that we can change over time, or is that just sort of naturally part of who we are as well?
Well, these differences in self-monitoring tend to be relatively stable, such as that you have individuals who are chronically more sensitive to what is demanded by a situation in terms of their self-presentations versus others who kind of try to stick to one true image that they always try to portray. What makes this dynamic really interesting is that there are sort of also different motivations besides these self-presentations that cross-cut these processes. So sometimes we project something about ourselves, let's say via dress, because of certain reactions, right? So in order to get those reactions, so we know if we dress professionally that we may be viewed as more competent. If we put makeup on, we may be viewed as more attractive. So sometimes those are used more or less consciously as means to achieve some of these interpersonal ends. But sometimes we present something despite the reactions that others will have. So we may view our dress as just reflecting our creativity versus the effect that may have, as in the caller's example that we heard, maybe very different. And sometimes the motivation is despite others making wrong conclusions about you based on your appearance, some people continue doing that because basically they don't want to feel forced not to express themselves a certain way just because other people reach what the person portraying would consider a wrong conclusion.
Right. Well, we are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. This hour, we're talking about self-perception and how others see us. And we would love for you to join in on this conversation with experiences you've had in your life, as we've just heard, where you realize that other people's perception doesn't line up with how you see yourself, or other experiences you've had on your journey to knowing yourself through time. You can give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Coming up in just a moment, we'll talk about some personality types that are less accurate when it comes to knowing who they are, and some personality types that are more accurate. With me, Zlatan Krijan, Associate Professor of Psychology at Iowa State University, and Laura Nauman, Assistant Professor of Psychology at Nevada State College. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about self-perception and how others perceive us. And with me, Laura Nauman, Assistant Professor of Psychology at Nevada State College, and Zlatan Krijan, Associate Professor of Psychology at Iowa State University. And we've talked a lot about how accurate or inaccurate people are at knowing whether they're good at something and other things about themselves. Zlatan, are there people, I mean, I guess we all know people who we think have an overinflated sense of self or don't seem to accurately understand how they interact with the world. So are there typical personality types that tend to be less accurate at knowing?
So, yes, they are. And one set of personality attributes that's received a lot of attention, including in our own lab, is narcissism, and specifically narcissistic grandiosity, so which is defined as a tendency to view yourself as more deserving and more competent than others, if you want to state it more broadly, better than other people. And usually what better means, it may mean better looking, but typically the things that are generally considered important are being smarter, more intelligent, you know, more a better leader, more influential. The kind of qualities that certain presidential candidates, which will remain unnamed, may have.
All right. So are there ways that people can overcome that if they tend to not understand their skills?
Yeah, that's kind of a catch-22. So given that this kind of reaches into the core of different personality traits, it's something that may be difficult to correct. Very often a person that has elevated narcissistic qualities believes sincerely these exaggerated things about him and herself, and any evidence to the contrary may be dismissed as either wrong or non-diagnostic. So it's quite difficult to rob people of these superiority convictions once they have them.
All right. Well, let's talk about the flip side of that coin. We also all know people who underestimate themselves all the time. And I guess we call that having low self-esteem. And it seems like they also don't know themselves and their abilities very well.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a long research tradition in depression, for example, such as individuals who suffer from depression tend to have very pessimistic, very negativistic views, both of themselves and the world more generally and the future. And very often those individuals or individuals generally more prone to negative emotions, sort of low in emotional stability, which is one of the key personality traits, those individuals often may underestimate their abilities. And that can be a problem because then you may not invest effort or try certain things that would be really important for your progress.
Obviously, we all kind of hope we fall into the middle ground there and have a pretty good idea of who we are, but also a little more optimistic outlook. Do people who maybe overinflate the idea of who they are and what they can accomplish a little bit, do they tend to be more successful than people who are maybe more realistic?
Yeah, there's evidence to suggest that. So you can think of sort of a sliding scale. A little self-exaggeration may be useful to the extent that it motivates you, makes you feel passionate, makes you feel confident. But the more and more that goes up, sort of the costs or the risks end up outweighing the benefits, either because you select sort of wrong options for performance or because of social costs, because people generally don't like braggarts and people who say things about themselves which are clearly inaccurate.
We're talking about self-perception and how others perceive us this hour. You're welcome to join the conversation, 866-780-9100. And Jim is on the line. Hi, Jim.
Hello.
Hi. And you have some experience with a difference between how people have seen you at different parts in your life.
Yes. Well, I've found interesting both from other people's perception of me and myself reevaluating who I am. In thinking about that, my past work life, I've been an executive and traveled the world and improving manufacturing operations. And so that requires a certain set of skills. And to some degree, I imagine that you need to be a bit assertive to accomplish what you need to in work. And so you develop those skills in order to be successful. And people in the work life would view me as being competent, I think, perhaps being kind of a tough manager, but they would look at that as normal behavior because that's what is required in that environment. And to follow that up then, since retirement, I've always enjoyed bird dogs and have trained dogs and as a hobby. And I now do that in retirement and move back to Iowa to do that. So two different sets of people would view me very much differently based on what they know about me.
That's really interesting. And obviously you need leadership skills for both.
Yes, but very, very different, I think. And one thing I found interesting, I am an elder in our church, and it was natural for me to bring my managerial skills from my work life into that role. And in doing so, I found that I probably needed to soften that approach and reevaluate how I went about trying to help in that role because it was just too abrupt for that environment. And so that's where you have to, or I do, I'll speak for myself, kind of reevaluate maybe the same skills, but how I apply them might need to be different because it affects people's perception of you in a way that perhaps you don't want to happen.
I think that's a great observation, Jim. Thank you so much for calling. And Laura, I want to give you an opportunity to respond to that because I think that's an experience that a lot of us have, maybe even within a week. I may be perceived differently on a weekday than I am on a Saturday.
Absolutely. Well, so what's really fascinating about Jim's example is, you know, he's talking about two entirely different contexts where he is navigating the situation, either, you know, as an executive manager, having to exert assertiveness and leadership qualities, to being in retirement and having a completely different set of friends who see him doing different things, but yet still kind of stepping up when needed, to belong to his clergy. And from a personality standpoint, we always like to, it's called triangulation. We don't just rely on what the person thinks about themselves, but we do seek out informants and presumably, if they've been interacting with the person for enough time, they should be able to tell us something more concrete about them, about their personalities. And so certainly, if we ask, Jim's work colleagues from back in the day, they would tell us all of these, very agentic type traits that, he can get the job done, he's assertive, he has command of the team. And while his friends may not see him in that, his current friends may not see him in the same situation or domain, I imagine they can still see elements of those qualities. And again, from a personality standpoint, those stable patterns, however they're exerted, kind of maintain themselves, especially in adult life, that they become more stable and consistent.
I'm curious, and I'd love to hear from both of you on this subject, because we've talked about how our idea of who we are develops over time and, how, of course, when you're a teenager, this is sort of on steroids, this experience of getting to know yourself. But I also think back to when I was a teenager and how other people saw me and communicated about how they saw me. That really informed how I felt about myself. I mean, I was a very nerdy teenager, and I'm still a nerdy adult, but at that point it was a huge social liability, and I felt like I didn't fit in, and I felt like I wouldn't fit in life. I mean, I think a lot of us inform who we are based on what other people think of us. Laura?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the theory that we psychologists call it is called social comparison theory. Like one way that we learn about ourselves is to compare ourselves to others or compare ourselves to what other people think about us. And, the research on narcissism is very clear that narcissists are not very good about taking into account other people's perceptions. You know, some of the characteristics are, again, being very disagreeable and defensive to a certain extent when faced with information that counters, perceptions that you hold for yourself. Other people, and I should say the majority of people, are not narcissists and do take that kind of feedback, even if it's negative, and think about it and say, oh gosh, how can I change myself? What do I need to do differently, or how can I be better? And we see those individual differences in kind of being accepting of that information. And certainly in adolescence, we are more concerned in many ways with the social consequences to our behavior. And so we can conform or change. And as we get older, we recognize that we don't need to care as much about others' approval. And that can be from our parents, that can be from our peers, and that can even be from society.
Now, a lot of us have things about ourselves that we don't like, that we would like to change. Zlatan, can we do that? I mean, let's say I know myself pretty well, but I'm not thrilled with some of the things about myself. Changing is hard, but can it be done?
It's very hard, and it can be done, but it depends what you are describing specifically. So certain aspects of personality would be very difficult to change. Now, they're likely to change slowly over time as sort of life takes effect, as we expose ourselves to certain situations or certain relationships over very long periods of time. And when considering personal change, sort of self-initiated, which is what, huge sections of bookstores are devoted to, one tip I think that it's very important is that a self-change is very unlikely to happen without changes in one's environment. Because very often it's those environments that support certain aspects of ourselves. They may support certain behavior or opportunities for certain behavior, as well as may include certain kind of social feedback, such as that we're being treated a certain way in this group of people. And to the extent that we want to change ourselves into something else, we need to think very carefully about how the environments in which we live may harm or help this kind of a change.
Well, and Liz is on the line from Iowa City with a related observation. Hi, Liz.
Hi.
Hi.
Bouncing off of that, I was raised pretty solid upper middle class until I was about 10, and my parents divorced. And my father didn't give us much financial support. So my mother was a single mother raising four children on her own. And the perception of us as a family and as individuals was very different when I realized at a young age that, we would get comments like, oh, do you all have the same father? So It was things like that. If people knew we were low income, the perception of my mother changed really dramatically. People would assume that somehow we just had a different kind of lifestyle.
Right, and a different background than you did.
Yeah, and that really contributed a lot to self-esteem issues because I was old enough to be very aware that we were treated differently as low income. And then on the flip side, living in a low income apartment complex, there was something about the way that we spoke and carried ourselves that the people in that complex thought we were uppity. And so we were bullied for thinking we were too good. And my mom was threatened with violence because we were perceived as thinking that we were above our situation.
Oh, Liz, thank you so much for sharing that. And Laura, I would love to, we're nearly out of time, but I would love to hear your reaction to that about how class, how income, how your circumstances shape that.
Absolutely. Well, I think this example very much mirrors people developing social identity. So this is most common to when children who are ethnic minorities are developing their sense of self in terms of, oh, I am not part of the majority. And so in this instance, this woman is dealing both with identities of having been in an upper social class and also from a lower social class, and is kind of getting backlash from both groups, and is, you know, she's straddling both of those, points on the fence. So it's a very fascinating thing. And again, as she mentioned, she was at the age where she had the awareness to understand, I'm no longer part of this group, but I also don't quite fit into this group, or that, you know, the lower social classes aren't as accepting because we have a different experience. And those are things that we are constantly navigating as we, again, shift spaces and get older and recognize how the situation can impact us.
And of course, race and ethnicity and gender, these are all elements that also play into that.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, as I mentioned, we are nearly out of time. And before we are done, I would love to hear from both of you about how important it is to know ourselves, because this is something that a lot of us spend a lot of time seeking, this journey of finding yourself. We try to help young people learn more about themselves and figure out who they are as they're growing up. This is part of the American mythology, I think, or the American ideal, is that you know yourself, you're true to yourself. So how important is this, Laura?
I think it's, you know, a constant navigation of trying to figure out who we are and understanding who we want to be. I think we recognize that there's always room for change and improvement. At the same time, I think it's important to be realistic in your assessment of yourself. You know, while it's great to have confidence and self-esteem, it's also important to recognize when we have our weaknesses. And then that's not a bad thing. A lot of people give, depressed people a hard time because they have a very kind of pessimistic viewpoint. But it can also, the other end of the pendulum is to be too optimistic or delusional about things, you know, coming along and going right all the time. So I would say, you know, do what you can to accurately assess and make a realistic assessment of who you are, not only your strengths, but also your weaknesses.
Laura, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Laura Nauman, Assistant Professor of Psychology at Nevada State College. And Zlatan, you get the final word. How important is this journey of knowing yourself?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with Laura that the accuracy, achieving, you know, at least modicum of accuracy is important, and getting this middle ground between not disparaging yourself or being underconfident, but also having a realistic sense of what you can do. And the other thing I would add is that throughout life, perhaps rather than knowing ourselves, it's important to keep discovering ourselves. And what I mean by that, by doing things and trying things out and going in a context that we can then actually see, are we a certain way? Do we like something? How do we behave in this kind of context? And very often we only have our own theories to go on that don't include a lot of personal experience. So I think by getting these real experiences, it really helps us hone a useful, pragmatic sense of self.
Zlatan, thank you so much.
Thank you all.
Zlatan Krijan, Associate Professor of Psychology at Iowa State University. We've spent the hour talking about self-perception and how others see us. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.